I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Hello there.
Jay Cross.
That's my name.
And Matthew Knight.
Hello there.
Yes, that's right. And welcome back, listener. Welcome back. We are, of course, remote podcasting again this week. Welcome to our self-isolation podcast. We hope you are staying safe and self-isolating as well.
This is great, actually. I didn't have to make anywhere near as much dinner as I normally have to make.
No, exactly. You didn't have to make
this
food.
Don't lie, you made exactly the same amount.
And you'll eat it all.
You're going back for thirds and fourths. I know you, J. Cross.
I kind of miss my
scene.
I miss being able to raid Jay's booze cupboard on a weekly basis. This is...
You have to pay for your own booze.
I know, it's ridiculous. I've had the same amount of beers delivered, you know, this week as I did last week, and I'm drowning. I'm drowning in cans of old peculiar or whatever it is that you drink.
I've got to say, I do miss turning up at yours and there's a lasagna there, which is clearly has the capacity to feed about 10 people.
Yeah.
But there's only four of us normally, and I'm missing not automatically having seconds with every dinner.
Yeah.
Well, that and, you know, you just, what do you make? Canned rice and canned chicken.
I did have that for lunch today. That's right.
Canned chicken.
Can you get canned rice?
You probably can.
But, rice in a can.
No, I just have
rice
chicken.
No, not rice in. That's bad for you.
Enough trouble about that already.
So this week on the podcast, we're actually doing a question special. Because
is that one of those ones where we say we're going to answer all the questions, but actually we don't.
I bet you we're just going to talk about absolutely nothing for 45 minutes, and then you're going to go, here's a question from Moog, and then we'll all say, yeah, and then that's it.
To be fair, there's not going to be any news for months, potentially, so we might have to drag this out for a very long time.
It's the year of the duck, the question duck, that is, because we're going to be doing questions. We're going to be hearing his chirpy caw-caw every week.
Caw-caw.
Well,
or
you know.
Chirp.
Or but, chirp, yeah.
Well, I think chirpy was more of his state of mind than the sound.
The duck is happy that we're going to be answering his questions, or her questions, every week. It's going to be wonderful. Before we get into that, if you want to ask a question, then you can do so on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. And, of course, at this point in the podcast, I would like to welcome our new patrons. Joining us on Patreon this week, Peter Kirk, Peter Carlson, Week of the Peters, and David Christiansen, who obviously didn't get the memo. But
is David week next week?
Exactly. But yes, welcome you three. I hope you're enjoying your self-isolation. So I guess before we crack into some questions, we should also talk about the fact that we have. This is now the third week, but we've teamed up with Thorpey Effects, and we're giving away one Thorpey Effects Heavy Water Dual High Headroom Boost Pedal, highly ranked by all of the guitar nerds in last year's Gear of the Year, and an absolutely fantastic Make Gooderer. So entry is open globally, and all you've got to do is visit Guitar Nerds on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. You can find the entry post and simply answer the question, what's one piece of merchandise available for purchase on the Thorpey Effects website? So you just need to visit thorpeyeffects.com to find the answer to that. We'll be announcing the winner on the 8th of April, right here on the podcast. So you've got until Monday the 6th of April to enter, and let's face it, we'll all have plenty of time to do that. So So yes, join the competition, win an incredibly wonderful Thorpe FX heavy water. But yes, right. Well, before we move on to some questions, I wanted to. You've moved around all the priorities thing. Okay, fine. I'll start at the top. Someone is editing the document that I use to know what I'm saying next.
Who put a question
helpful.
Mark on the teleprompter?
In true Ron Burgundy style, Joe's completely flummoxed by any small changes to
the
script.
This is very annoying. Right, I was looking for these. Okay, right. First of all, I want to talk to Matt Knight about increasing his Boss collection. Because, Matt, you bought an unusual new Boss pedal this
week.
Well,
I'm just the worst. eBay is not your friend when you're at home all the time, because you can actually start to... The key to eBay is always look at it all the time. And I find that you have to look for the listings that finish at stupid times because no one bids on them. And I was really after an FZ3. Which is a fuzz pedal that we made in the mid-90s. That, interestingly enough, is the only Boss pedal to not have an IC. It is a completely through-hole design, classic pedal, if you will. There's no fancy components. It is literally just like, basically, it's a silicon fuzz face. And I managed to get one at a reasonable price. And then this morning I bought a Made in Japan BF2. because I just need to get all the...
Is that the bass flanger?
No, the bass flat...
It's just called BF because of Boss Flanger, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is just Boss Flanger.
Why isn't it
too.
FL? That is a bit weird.
I don't know. I've never actually thought of it. I just...
Because everything else, there's nothing else that begins with B, is there? Except for like Blues Driver, but that there's nothing else that's B for Boss.
No, I never thought about that.
There is actually a bass flanger. Yeah. Oh right.
Well, BF3 has got a bass input. Did we actually make a specific? I mean, the Boss bass pedals.
I think there is a specific bass flanger, isn't there? Isn't it like brown? Yeah. BF2B. Yeah.
Or not BF2B.
Yeah, indeed.
What, you mean, is it brown and gold, like those old Japanese
ones?
Yeah,
there is a bass flanger, the BF2B, 1991, I think. It's an odd-looking pedal.
Yeah, I just, I don't know, just really wanted a BF2. Because I think it all started because I got sent a PH1R, which was the early, not the first one, but the second version of the Phaser. And obviously,
what's
I've
the
been
R stand for?
Resonance, because they put an extra resonance control on. And then obviously, I got a couple of things, like I got the old FZ2 Hyperfuzz, and I'd been picking up these, I guess, slightly more odd Boss pedals that seem to all be going up to ridiculous values recently. And I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna have to get one. And I missed out on one yesterday and then managed to pick one up today, even cheaper. It's an old BF2 all analog flanger, runs on 12 volts, the old classic Boss ACA adapter. While I'm here, might as well just start getting the whole Boss collection. All the good ones first, you know. So it was like the Dan Electro food series. You got to get the good ones first, like the ones that are actually usable, and then, you know.
Matt, you're talking about a flanger here. Like, read the room.
Whoa. I am a big fan of flangers.
That's your company then, Matt.
Well, that's my audience right there.
You run a flanger at a slow speed and you have like a tape saturation.
Don't bring me into this. I don't run a flanger at any speed.
Right, I mean, you know, you could go down the route, you know, with this sort of thing. It looks like there were 6 different label colours as well. So, you know, we could get the black, green, made in Japan, or green, made in Taiwan, you know, pink, orange, dark grey. There's so much choice.
You've got to catch them all.
So I didn't realise, Matt, and you might be able to shed some light on this. I'm just looking at the bass flanger, the BF2B, and there were 3 bass-specific pedals. It looked like they all came out at roughly the same time.
Yes, they did.
The CE2B and the GE7B.
Yes. Worst colour ever.
I've got the GE7B, and it's the best colour ever. The brown and gold looks awesome.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
I didn't realise that, because isn't there another base EQ as well?
No, there's a GEB7.
Yeah, yeah. GEB7. That's
and
what,
a GE7B.
What, yeah. Which one do I have?
There was one that came out recently, wasn't there?
I've got an old Japanese one.
Yeah, that's the brown one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the GE7B.
That's what I'm talking about.
yeah, gold, brown and gold. Very odd choice. Yeah, they did. I think there was a chorus, a flanger and a EQ around that sort of time.
Are they...
The essential... Yeah, that's, yeah the,
honestly. All the essential
the holy trinity of bass pedals.
Are they the only Boss pedals that have been released at the same time that are all the same colour?
Yes. Yeah, that was a specific bass range.
Yeah.
Bass. Weird. Very weird.
I was really into it. That EQ stayed on my board for absolutely years. I used it as a drive. It was... Because you could just... Because it had like a level boost on the end. So you could just boost all the mids, crack up the level, and it would just collapse the gain stage of your amp, and you got like a lovely fuzzy drive.
Well, there you go.
There you go. That's very good.
You know, get it back on the board. That's what I say. Yeah. But yeah, so I'm after some of the kind of Boss rare. I mean, BF2 is not necessarily a rarity. We made it for 12 years, but kind of wanted the first made in Japanese version to go with some of the other made in Japan. Pedals I've got, and the one I'm after, and they never ever come up, and I only saw one, even one, when I was in Japan, and that's the PQ4, which was the first and only Boss pedal to have four in the name, and it was a parametric EQ. Very weird, didn't make many of them, and I'd imagine they've probably all sold out after a couple of years ago. The guy that recorded Queens of the Stone Age Songs of the Deaf was like, oh, this is the exact effect that Josh Homme used on all of his guitar tones for Songs of the Deaf. And everyone was like, definitely not going to sell it now. so yeah, I'm just sort of on a bit of a quest to just hunt around and pick up some oddities from the Boss range. Maybe I'll get the XT2 Extortion.
It seems to be like the mid-90s were like a key time for weird Boss pedals, because like it feels to me like Boss had made all of the obvious things, and then they went, oh yeah, pedals, you know, are not quite, you know, in the mid-90s pedals weren't what they are now. So it kind of just feels like they were kind of going, oh mate, what do we make next? I don't know, parametric EQ, three bass pedals? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was, and I think, yeah, like you say, it was just a weird time for pedals in general. I mean, there's just so much. There's so much weird Boss stuff out there.
Yeah.
And it's the same as, like, I've said it for Boss, I said it for Electro-Harmonics. It's like someone needs to do a book that catalogues absolutely everything that Boss and Roland have ever made. I saw a video with a guy on YouTube that picked up because Boss branded some products, or should I say Roland branded some products Boss that you wouldn't necessarily associate with guitar. So I think there was like a Boss zip drive at one point.
Yes.
Because Boss made all the digital recorders. So there was a Boss zip drive. But we also did what are they called? Like the old, remember in like the late 90s, early 2000s, everyone had like a digital file of fax. What were they called?
Personal organizer.
Yeah, personal organizer, but it's a Boss MIDI personal organizer, which has got like an inbuilt tiny keyboard on a touchscreen.
That sounds amazing.
So you can like program MIDI notes and output MIDI into your sequencers. But it's got some inbuilt sound, so you could like be on the bus and be like, oh yeah, I've got this great melody. I'm just gonna like draw it into my like little Boss handheld organizer, and then I'm going to get home and just going to MIDI out, and then yeah, I'm going to go straight into my keyboard. And you know, there's so much bizarre stuff. I think when technology just took that like boom, and everyone was like, oh my god, we've got to make as much stuff as possible.
Well, on that note, do you remember the Orange OPC? Mm-hmm. When Orange made a computer?
Yeah.
So weird. It wasn't even that long ago. It was 2010, I think it was.
Orange have made weirder products than that, though, Jay.
Mate, it's a computer.
Orange made a digital whiteboard.
What?
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did. Orange made a
Isn't
digital...
Isn't that also just a computer with paint loaded on it?
Yeah, exactly. No, they did. They made a digital whiteboard for education purposes. There you go.
Oh, no, I do remember that. Yeah, it was really expensive, wasn't
the
it?
Orange music board, I believe that's what it's called.
You could draw music notes on the stave that was kind of built into the framework of the whiteboard, and then, you know, it would play those notes. It was...
I think this might actually still even be available.
Oh, even better. Even better. Listeners everywhere, I implore you to go out and buy the Orange whiteboard. I thought it was the best product, the best thing maybe ever.
Didn't make it into Gear of the Decade, though, did it?
No.
Should have done.
We should do weirdest gear of the decade. Just all the stuff that definitely isn't gear of the decade, but is totally
what, like
weird.
Line 6 Variaxes and stuff like that.
Yeah, like that. But yeah, if you want to also go down, just lastly, weird boss thing, the EH2 enhancer. Basically, if you ever watch a demo of it, doesn't do anything.
What?
Yeah, it's really weird. Again, I think it was aimed at like slap bass players.
Wait, I remember the limiter enhancer. They did the limiter enhancer.
This is just the enhancer version. This was came out before the limiter enhancer, and it basically just adds a bit of top end back into your sound.
Oh dear. Wow.
Yeah, for those people that need to play slap bass. I mean, we sold it for 7 years, so
evidently there were enough of them.
Yeah.
On the topic of pedals, last week we also we talked about the Origin Effects revival trem that we got, and I had a go on. That was really good. We spoke about that last week, but there were two other pedals that I hadn't got round to having a go on, which they'd sent round. So we got the Cali 76 Compact Deluxe, which is the deluxe compact pedal version of their studio style compressor, and we got the Revival Drive Compact, which is their small version, again, compact in the name, of the Revival Drive, which was that massive drive pedal that had like a billion rotary controls on it.
Yeah.
26 controls.
Yeah.
For a drive pedal. I mean, that's even beyond...
It was definitely slightly overkill on the controls on the original Revival Drive. For me, I like the simplicity. But I love the sound of it. So it's fantastic that they've popped this into a compact of some form. So it's just their standard like 6-control compact. And listener, if you've ever seen like an Origin FX pedal, they're brilliant. They're slightly longer than a normal pedal. They weigh an absolute ton, and they're like in a big proper.
I think it's regular size.
Yeah, it's they're a bit long. They're a bit long. I see. I understand. I gotcha. Because you're tall. Wonderful. All right. Okay. That's great. But yeah. But it was. Really
that
good.
What I was going with. But that's fine.
Really good as a drive pedal because that control that everyone wants, a blend, and it's just the whole thing. It's a completely analog pedal which is designed to react like a valve amp would. I was a very, very big fan of it, and the same thing that they'd popped on their Revival Trem, which is the post drive EQ controls that you can toggle between 3 settings depending on what type of amplifier you're using. But I thought it sounded absolutely fantastic.
I think what's interesting is the Revival Drive basically is. It's trying to replicate the way a valve amp behaves at circuit level. So rather than just like, this is a Marshall-style drive or whatever, this is like, the idea, I think, is that inside the circuitry is what it's doing to the guitar signal is replicating what the preamp basically does inside a guitar amp. And it's pretty nuts. I think the way they go about it and how they do it and all the components they use... Like, if you just have to look at the full size one to go, I mean, I think it's even got like the full size one's even got like ghost notes and stuff, like the over harmonics that you get when you hit like certain notes. I mean, it's pretty full on.
Yeah, definitely. Product. Yeah, it's absolute sort of the original one is proper molecular level building your drive. I love the simplicity of this one because it meant that I was able to crack out. You know, I do the same thing with any drive. I just try and get like a really nice low drive, you know, sort of low gainy drive setting on there, like an ampy kind of thing, transparently thing. And this does it very, very well. But it also does that really like you can really punch the gain and it gives you that really muddy, fuzzy, sort of floppy speaker sound that I love about kind of vintage style amp drive. So yeah, really super cool pedal. And obviously the Compact Deluxe, kind of their compressor, their standard compressor. Again, the thing that makes the Origin FX compressor so good is the fact that they've got that dry mix.
Compression.
I just think that makes such a difference nowadays. Like, I mean, my kind of disinterest in compressors has been well publicized, but when you can blend in your dry signal, it does make a difference, I think.
Yeah, and I had one of these, and I thought, you know, it sounded great. It sounded really.
Oh,
really
you had
good.
One of these. See, I used the bass compressor. But the difference between the bass compressor is it has the attack and release control moved into a single rotary, and then the last control, the sixth control you get, is a low pass filler that you can kind of you can excuse your low end from being compressed because that's kind of the thing that you want to ring.
I would like to excuse my low end.
Please
thanks.
Excuse my low end.
but on the standard one, you're controlling your attack and your release separately. And then what I like is you're controlling your in, your at, you've got like an input and an output, so you can get the compressor to actually act in as kind of a make good or a preampy sort of slightly gainy thing. I just think they're absolutely, you know, the best of the best when it comes to compression. They're very, very cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's fully replicating a UA 1176, isn't it? It is like, which is the ultimate studio compressor. And ultimately, that's what people want a lot of the times with compression now. You know, they don't want the squidgy, like mega compressed, like country twang. They want basically, I want everything to sound like mega produced, like a pro studio.
That's it,
and
isn't
that's what
it? Yeah. Yeah, it's just making everything sound a little bit more tinselly. Now, Jay Cross, we've been meaning to talk about this for weeks, and we just haven't got round to it. So we should talk about it now. You brought home a Fender Lead the other day that we all had a go on, and we were going to talk about on the podcast, but we're going to leave it for a week or something because we had too much other things to talk about and now we can't all see each other, so we don't get to have a go at it anymore.
Yeah, so the lead 2 and 3 reissues were announced at NAMM earlier this year, which feels like a million years ago, but yeah, it was only about 2 months ago that we were me and Matty were over there. But the Lead series is a reissue from some guitars that were originally launched between 79 and 82, I think it is, was the original releases. And the Lead 2 and 3 are part of the Player series, so they're in that kind of like £500-600 mark, I guess. And they're really cool. They're really fun. They look kind of like halfway between a Strat and a Tele, so they're double cut. But the pretty simple. So you've just got two pickups in there. The Lead 2 is two single coils and the Lead 3 is two humbuckers. You've got with the Lead 3, so with the two humbuckers, you've got a three-way selector switch, and then you've also got another switch which allows for coil splitting. And the Lead 2 is a three-way selector switch, and then you've also got a two-way selector switch for putting the pickups in and out of phase, so you can get that kind of Peter Green sound if that's what you want as well. They come in a bunch of very cool colors, especially the Lead 2. You can get in like a slime green.
Really unusual colors for Fender.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the point is that, like, the, you know, the Player series as a whole is just kind of it doesn't take itself as seriously as maybe the standards used to. So, you know, there are kind of fun colours that come out every now and again, even just for a short period of time. And like there was some shell pink player strats that came out a little while ago. And, you know, there's just like some mad stuff going on. And I think it works, especially with these guitars, because, I mean, look, at the end of the day, the lead is never going to be anybody's first guitar, is it? It's going to be another guitar that you have because you want something a little bit different, a little bit fun. So why not get it in slime green or in purple metallic if you want the lead too? So yeah, they're really cool, really fun, really easy to play.
Super 80s.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's 80s is vintage now, mate. You know, it's we're all getting into that area. But yeah, no, they're hardtail. They're great for you know, the bands who they've got promoting them at the moment. I think I saw it was Fontaine's DC, who are a band who people are really into at the moment. They're like a kind of Dublin post-punk band, I guess, but they've been picked up by Six Music and people are really into them, so cool to see them doing something with those guitars. And yeah, just really nice and fun, interesting guitars. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend going into a shop and trying one just yet, because you know the shops are closed, so but the videos are really cool. It's worth checking out because
they're really
fun guitars. And yeah, like you say, I brought one over, I don't know, it must have been 6 weeks ago, and yeah, we just plugged it in and it sounded great, felt great.
Jay, I hate to say it, but I think that was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. It wasn't 3 weeks ago.
It was. It was the last time we were together and we podcasted, which wasn't, obviously not this week, wasn't last week. It was the week before that.
Crikey.
Yeah.
Wow.
It feels like it's been about 2 years, but what, yeah, it was 3 weeks ago.
What did you think
ago.
Of the lead, Mark?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. You know, they're a pretty quirky little thing, obviously. And yeah, I like what they're doing in terms of, you know, different pickup combinations and stuff and a few different options. Obviously, the colours are amazing. And yeah, for someone who's looking for something a bit different, you know, something that essentially feel-wise doesn't stray too far from just like a regular Strat, you know, modern Strat or Tele neck feel. Yeah, something definitely different. Yeah, a nice little addition to the roster.
Yeah, yeah, Fender are really expanding really fast at the moment, and kind of it feels like they're bringing out everything out of their old catalog.
Yeah, there is a bit of that coming on, isn't there? Which is cool. So just having a look on the Wikipedia page, because I wanted to make sure I got the dates right. The lead series did indeed run from 79 to 82. So the lead one, which there isn't a reissue of, is just a single humbucker. Then lead two is the two single coils. That's 79 to 82 as well. The lead three only came out in, was only available in 1982. And there's a really nice little summary of that guitar on the Wikipedia page here. It says, lead three, 1982. Two humbuckers, one at the neck, the other at the bridge. Okay, fine.
One there's at the also neck, the other the, one behind the bridge, on the headstock, something like yeah. that.
There's also a nice little peek behind the curtain here. The lead bass, an instrument that never went into production, but there's a photo of a 1979 prototype in the 1990 book The Fender Bass, which features two slanted single coil pickups and has a 34-inch scale length. So yeah, something that I didn't know anything about. But yeah, really interesting. Really interesting.
I really hope they actually make that bass now. I hope the lead is popular so they make that bass. That's what we want, more Fender basses.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this week, because if you noticed how lots of companies are starting to make their software available for free for everyone, because everyone's
loads of plugins and doors and like loads of things for free because people got not much else to do.
Exactly. There's like the Korg K-Oscillator, there is the Moog, their Model D, and then Two Notes. Matt, Two Notes released something. I didn't quite catch this, but you did.
Yes. Let me find, because it's worth mentioning. It was put up in the group as well. Two Notes have something called the Torpedo Wall of Sound, which is a plugin that uses all of their cab modeling. So that's cabs in different rooms, really nice UI. You know, you can put a Mesa Boogie cab in a stadium, move it around the stage, move the microphones in different positions. I think you can run up to four cabs at once. So effectively, yeah, I'll just give you a quick spec rundown. The world's best speaker cab simulation for DAW. So you've got 8 power amps, 8 mics, EQ, runs on Windows and Mac. And it's now totally free for life. They give away a free trial normally. But yeah, you get a permanent license for life if you sign up within the next 30 days. So yeah, amazing. You can, in one instance, this is crazy. So some of the specs here, you can mic up to 20 cabs inside a single plugin. It's all stereo, so you can run different cabs to different speakers. You've got a whole bunch of presets. I think you can load in your own IRs. So obviously, I think there's hundreds and hundreds of the ones in there. Loads of different power amp simulations. So it's just like the all-in-one kind of solution for recording at home, especially if you're working within a plugin.
Ugh, amazing. That's absolutely fantastic. But yeah, there've been a load of stuff. Cherry Audio released their a modular synth which has something like 130 individual modules that you can build, and then you can virtually wire patch cables across to create your own custom synthesizer. Very cool. Normally retails at like 150 quid, and they've made that free as well. So that was tons of fun. So what I thought this weekend, I was supposed to be in the studio with my band writing our next record, and obviously we couldn't do that. So I decided for the weekend to turn my house into a recording studio, and me and Emma decided to try and record a record in 2 days across the Saturday and the Sunday. So I was actually exhausted by the end of the weekend, but the cool thing was I managed to do it all with kind of free stuff that companies had made available. So like, listener, if you listen weekly, a few weeks ago we were talking about DAWs, and I spoke about Persona Studio One, because Persona Studio One is a fantastic bit of software, but it's a fantastic DAW, but it's available as in Prime, they call it, which is a completely free version of Studio One, which gives you access to all of the basics, plenty of built-in instruments as well, and it's really, really good. So I decided to record using that, using any of the free plugins and bits and bobs that I was able to get hold of, and we used a lot of Emma's 1979 Korg MS-10 and a bit of Greco RS-90, but we made a ridiculous record. In fact, I wanted to get the Chaoscillator on it, and the Chaoscillator app does allow you to record audio, but I wanted to record like a solo, a Chaoscillator solo, which I needed it to last like maybe 40 seconds across a section. I couldn't record that amount of time on the Chaoscillator phone app. So I Bluetoothed it into my little Marshall speaker, and I mic'd up the Marshall speaker.
Right, Steve Albini. Honestly.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Which, of course, then because I was taking it in as like an audio track like that, I could add loads of effects. Well, I guess I could have anyway in the DAW, but I could mess around with it loads in the DAW as well. So it was great fun. But I'm gonna put that out for free. It can definitely only ever be for free. It's just a 15-minute experiment in weirdness. I thoroughly recommend listeners make a record with your self-isolation time. You know, why not? What a wonderful time to make weird music.
It's irritating to me that the kind of music I make really cannot be made at home, you know, because...
Reinvent yourself, Mark.
No, I just don't really like any other music. Like, basically, if it doesn't sound like the Ramones, then I'm not really that interested in making it. That's kind of the only thing that I like playing.
Well, speaking about things that don't sound like the Ramones, you want to talk about a band.
Well, I was going to talk a little bit about the Mountain Goats, because I've kind of been getting into them in the last couple of days, really. But I think, you know, we said we were going to do a question special, and we're over half an hour into this podcast, and we've not answered a single question. So I want to listen to it a little bit more, and I will get back to you next week. I'm just digging the slightly distorted acoustic guitar sound of the Mountain Goats. But let's talk about it next week.
Very well, very well. Okay, well, in that case, usher in the chant of the question duck. There it is. It is time for us to answer some questions.
This episode of Guitar Nerds is brought to you by Shergold Guitars and their latest electric guitar, the Provocateur. Celebrated by Total Guitar Magazine as one of the most refined single cuts on the market, with endlessly satisfying playability and a flawless set of tones, the Shergold Provocateur combines remarkable specification with a retro vibe for a unique and bona fide rock guitar. From the brand that once powered the likes of Joy Division and is now championed by modern guitar pioneers and So I Watch You From Afar and many others, comes a fresh and exciting range of electric guitars. Designed by legendary British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle and featuring a roasted mahogany neck and a solid mahogany body loaded with USA-made Seymour Duncan pickups, it's easy to see why Guitarist Magazine officially voted the Provocateur one of the best electrics of 2019. You can find your nearest Shergold dealer at shergoldguitars.com. And if you're not in the UK, don't fear. Many UK-based Shergold dealers have super awesome international shipping options to guarantee your Shergold will make it to you in the most far-flung of places. Proudly stand out from the crowd and discover yours today at shergoldguitars.com. Shergold Guitars. Be your own original.
So first up, Dan on our Facebook group has asked, not wanting to make everything about the virus, but when you think about spending a lot of time at home in the coming weeks, what piece of gear are you excited to dig into and get to know better? Or what piece of gear are you going to panic buy because, you know, lockdown is round the corner and it's now or never? Matt Knight, first up.
Oh, I really don't want to have to go down like the company voice, but I'm going to. Obviously, we're spending a lot of time at home and we still have work to do. I still have, you know, a lot of people that need training and stuff like that. So one thing I've done is I've brought home a few bits of key stuff. So I've got a GT1000, which I have been digging into already. And obviously, I think I mentioned this on the podcast a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago. One of my personal goals, development goals at work is to record, is to research and then record a track and build like a home studio setup. So I've got a little mixer and I've set the output of the mixer now to go into my quad capture, and I was just today was just messing around on my lunch break, GT1000 straight into an interface for recording, just into GarageBand, and I was like, I haven't really done this for like years, but it's been so interesting to dive into a multi-effects again and go, can't rely on the way that I'm used to my two amps sounding or any effects, and just sort of going, I'm going to like dial in some sounds that necessarily aren't me. And then I tasked a bunch of my other team who work with product across the rest of Europe to kind of create a bunch of sounds in different genres and stuff. So I'm sort of interested actually to just dive into a bit more product knowledge on our own stuff, but also I've got a couple of really nerdy guitar books that I haven't read for ages, like Analog Man's Guide to Vintage Effects, which I'm going to read from cover to cover.
That's really funny. So someone who I work with put that book up on Instagram this week, and I hadn't thought about it for ages, and had a look, and I hadn't realized how old it was.
Yeah.
So that book came out in 2000 or 2001 or something. It's yep. Just like, how much has changed since then, you know? I mean, it's just absolutely crazy, you know. You think about how many pedals now that we consider, you know, not necessarily vintage, but how many pedals you consider classics that just
didn't exist,
you know. Carbon copy wasn't around then, you know. It's so funny.
What's also interesting is I also brought home Pedal Crush.
Oh, did you? Oh,
which is the probably more up-to-date version. So I'll definitely be digging into that. I think one thing I really want to understand more is just like circuitry and the design behind pedals and how pedals come together and how different components interact. So rather than just sort of like loads of different individual bits of gear, I just want to understand the inner workings of gear a little bit better. So yeah, I'm definitely interested in diving into Pedal Crush, and it's beautifully laid out as well. It's an amazing
book.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful book. It's a really excellent book. Yes. Mark Packham, what about you?
Well, to be honest, I sort of don't really have much choice because I don't have an amp at the moment. Jay, as we know, has borrowed my Katana. So I haven't really got anything here to play with. Like, I've got
would you buy it? Would you use this time to get something?
Well, I mean, the only thing that I might get is a set of the Katana headphones. The Katana personal amplification device.
Thank you, sir.
And jam along with some stuff. But actually, I think what I'm actually going to do is just try and write a load of music. And for me, what that entails is sitting down with the Dan Electro that I bought, because it's the kind of louder of the two electric guitars that I've got at the
Which
moment.
Which is the Dan? That's a DC-59,
yeah, DC-59,
right?
Yeah, it's a 90s one. And just writing some songs. And to me, the way that pans out is I'm just using notes on my phone and I just sit and record some bits. And what I really want to do is get a kind of album in shape for when this all dies down and, you know, wow, we can finally get together and play music again and record something else. You know, just put out an album this year. Obviously haven't really been able to do any gigs to support that yet. We had some stuff coming up in the summer, but I think that'll be off. Yeah, I think the plan will be record some stuff, send it to the people who will be playing on it, and then when we can all get back together in a rehearsal room, just jam it out and then record again quickly at the beginning of next year, maybe.
Awesome. Jay Cross, tell me you're going to talk to me about some actual gear.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've still got one of the Spire Studios here, and I, a couple of times, have gotten it out and I've threatened to really have a proper go at it. And I think I'm going to do it at some point this week. Some point over the next couple of weeks. So I've got that. I've also got a couple of my, well, I've still got all of those Roland Boutique synths that I bought ages ago, never used. And then I put up on Reverb because I was like, look, I don't need these. It's not going to work. And then someone bought them and then never paid for them. So I got annoyed and just left them in a box. But I think I might just crack them out and just try and do something with them. You know, maybe I'll try and make a lo-fi pop record or something.
Perfect time. Perfect time to make lo-fi pop records. Yeah. Perfect time for weird music.
Yeah, totally. So we'll do that. And I've got loads of like stuff knocking about. Yeah, I don't know. I think the main thing would be to try and have a go on the Spire Studio.
Oh, the Spire. I mean, we mentioned it loads last year, but the Spire is such a fantastic piece of equipment. Yeah, and Matt were talking about it earlier. I used one over the weekend to record a ridiculous bit of piano where I wanted to create a natural binaural thing. So I used the Spire and walked through the house whilst Emma sat playing the piano.
So the piano was...
So the piano moves
stationary,
across.
But
yeah,
you,
exactly.
Okay. But how did you? Was it just plugged into a really long extension lead?
No, the Spire's got 4-hour battery life on it.
Oh, so really?
Exactly.
Right. So yeah, it's got an.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Eternal rechargeable battery. It's wicked. I was thinking about just taking it out and recording just some audio, like out and about. Like,
I did that as well.
Living in London, just doing a few bits.
We get loads of robins and stuff in our garden. I wanted some bird sounds and stuff, so I plonked it out on our bench out there and just got like all the sounds of like wind and the robins and stuff. And, you know, just because if you use that sound check thing, I know the sound check thing's obviously designed to interpret what instrument you're playing, but what it essentially does is adjusts the gain and compression for the track. So if, you know, normally if you were using a handy recorder and there was wind, you're going to get that incredibly muffled, you know, sound when wind hits a mic. But because it can kind of judge it in the sound check element, you get a really sort of clean take. It's really, really wonderful piece of equipment.
That wouldn't work for me because all I've got here are really loud seagulls. So it's
just horrible. It could be a really good
really experimental record. Just run them through delay pedals.
That's maybe pretty what much I'll what I that is what I have done.
Yeah, maybe what I'll do is I'll cover myself in bread and then I'll run down the street with the Spy Studio under my arm.
Well, there are
and
some cramps.
Get the capture the sound of seagulls pecking bread off of my body.
The Spire has some built-in space reverbs as well, so you can run it through that and it will sound fantastic.
What you should do, Jay, is run the sound of seagulls through a wah pedal backwards to create the seagull effect and see what happens.
Oh, that's a great idea.
No, it just sounds like a wah pedal at that point.
Yeah.
Now, with on this question, I think I'm gonna. I recently got hold of a load of the Meris stuff, which is a pedal brand that, whilst I spent some time with at GAC, I think they'd only, you know, by the time I left GAC, they'd only released the Mercury 7, which was their reverb, the Octabit Junior, which is their Octava and sequencer, and maybe they just put out their delay, which was called the Polymoon, I think was the delay.
Polymoon, yeah.
But they released a handful of other things since then that I just haven't had a chance. Of course, the Enzo is the big one. Their incredible synthesizer, which is here, and I do want to try it. But the pedal that most excited me that they released, I never got to try it, and it's turned up yesterday. So I'm going to really try to. The thing with Meris pedals is you really do need to learn how to use them as well. They take, you know, there's a learning curve with them. Is there Hedra? I don't know if Matt, if you've seen this. This is a pedal that they describe as a rhythm prism. It's a three-voice rhythmic pitch shifter. So
yeah,
you've got control of three individual pitches, which you can use to create a chord if you want, you know, from you plucking a note, or you can stagger them because it works in sort of short delay times as well. So you can get it to do, you know, that sort of boop, boop, boop. You know, that sort of thing. But also you can run all of those pitches. You can either run them in dual or series. And there are two ways of running them in series, one of which runs them through the effects loop. So you essentially drive, you repeatedly drive the looping shifting pitches, so you end up with this you could have a crystal clean first note, front end note, and then this like rapidly fuzz enhancing pitch movement behind it. I don't know if I explained that very well. You know, on top of that, it has like this microtune thing which you can use to add like some modulation so you can get it to sound chorusy, but if you take it to the extremes, then it tries to pitch correct what you are doing, which works really interestingly if you do something like just you know, slide a note the whole way up the neck. So, you know, that's just gonna be like, but it will turn that into like a perfect sort of, you know, seamless note slide that with a real sort of 8-bit sort of Mario gamer style sound. But it's just such an interesting pedal that seems like it can do like a million different things and all of them are crazy. I really want to get stuck into it. I thoroughly recommend it, listeners. The Meris stuff, I think, for what it does isn't even, you know, that outrageously priced. So like $300 for the Hedra. And I think
that price, and we said it before, I think that's kind of the new standard for, like, you know, it's difficult, you know, the term boutique gets thrown around a lot, obviously, but I think, you know, for a lot of these companies, that's the average. That's what you expect, really, I think, now, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Dangerous thing about the Meris stuff is, like, one's never enough. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could definitely add one of these to a pedal wall, but you're definitely going to be buying another one.
Yeah,
that's why you see all of these Chase Bliss boards that are just Chase Bliss pedals, isn't it? It's because people buy one and they're like, yeah, cool, I've got my head around how this works now. Right, next up, the brothers or whatever, you know, and they just go, people go absolutely mad for it. I think Meris are one of those companies who've really managed to, in a very short period of time, develop quite a cult following.
Well, they just seem to manage to consistently release really odd things. You know, the Polymoon delay was suitably bonkers. Like, there was nothing, you know, conventionally functional on there. The most normal pedal they made was the Mercury 7, their reverb, and that was only normal because it came out at a time when, you know, weird, outlandish reverbs were kind of becoming the norm.
Don't forget that obviously Angelo, one of the lead designers for Meris, was obviously one of the lead designers and programmers at Line 6. So his main projects were DL4 and FM4.
Right. I didn't realise that.
Yes. Yeah.
You've probably told us that before.
He was behind some of, you know, well, I mean, he's helped the DL4. I mean, I'm sure when he made that, he was like, oh, there's a load of different things I could do. I mean, the Hedra, the easiest way, I guess, to explain it is it's very much like the old Eventide rack units, the H3000, you know, pitch, you know, where each delay repeat is running through a pitch shifter, basically. But yeah, very, very cool stuff, high quality, good algorithms, super.
Yeah, definitely worth getting hold of. Now, on to our next question. Mark Kadowaki asks, why does classic gear and styling continue to be so popular generation after generation? So many innovations have come and gone, where Tellys, Strats and Les Pauls were Tellys, Strats and Les Pauls really perfect from the get-go. So there's the question, gang. What do we think? Why is this industry failing to really grab hold of new designs in the same way, for example, you know, in much the same way that the automobile industry is grabbing hold of new designs?
I think cars are a kind of a different example, really, because, you know, yes, if you look back at the way that cars were built in the Please don't get me wrong, I'm no like rivet head, so I don't know a huge amount about cars, but my understanding is cars in the 50s were, you know, the production means between then and now is very different, so it became a lot cheaper to make cars that look like, for example, a Ford Fiesta or a Volkswagen Golf or whatever, instead of a hot rod or, you know, a Dodge Charger. I don't know. I don't know anything about 50s cars. But, you know, you think about that and then you think about, okay, well, what are the production methods made to use a Strat in 1956 in comparison to making a Strat in 2020? And the answer is basically nothing has changed. You know, sure, there's some bits that are pre-CNC'd, but by and large, it's still the same process. And the guitar world hasn't really had to innovate in that way because it's still made by an individual. And so innovation a lot of the time is forced by, you know, cost cutting to a degree. And, you know, short of making square guitars, I'm not really sure what you can do to making guitars cheaper.
What I would say is, as well, you're shooting for different things. When the evolution in guitars has happened, in cars has happened, because those things have been necessary. You know, they need to be more safe. They need to be more efficient. In recent years, they need to be more green. You know, they need to be less reliant on non-renewable energy. Like, guitars don't need to do anything.
Well, that is true. I will agree with that. Look, I think the one similarity that I think works is that cars these days are made in a wind tunnel, which is why all cars essentially look the same. It's because they're trying to be you know as aerodynamic as possible in order to make them as efficient as possible. In fact, that's king, because efficiency is the number one thing for a car. No one's like, you know, people are trying to make them look good, but really you're never ever going to make anything look as good as a Hillman Imp Singer Chamois, you know, because you can't anymore, because you couldn't possibly make those angles, because you were limited by the fact that you're in a wind tunnel, because you're trying to make something that is that is makes the most sense to use. Whereas with a guitar, we could do that. In fact, people do that. Do you not think that's what Strandberg aiming at with things like the Endure neck and stuff like that, that encourages perfect form? That guitar encourages us to play better, to play more properly, and to be better.
But that's all the difference is subjective. How do you measure that? You know, how do you measure a guitar can't help you play
well through technical ability. Like
that's not down to the guitar though. Very little of that I would say is down to the guitar. That's down to the player. You know, it's like what the end product of it is, the music that comes out of it or the playing that comes out of it, and that's down to the player. That's not down to the guitar. And what I think is, the difference with cars, which was actually in the initial email, you know, Mark said, like, you know, we're not driving Model A's anymore. Why does music get different? I would say that it's all about the end product. You know, that a car, you can't have a Hillman Imp anymore because that's not a safe car to be driving around anymore. You can't make a car like that. Whereas, like, guitars, you do whatever you want. And it turns out that most people want things to basically just be a Tele or a Les Paul.
If there could be a guitar made that will help you, that is more comfortable, you certainly would admit that, you know, that some guitars are less comfortable to play than others. If we can have guitars that are going to...
That's subjective, though. That's completely subjective because, you know, it depends on what feels best for you. That's, you know, there's not, it's not like you can't put that to the test in the way that you can put a Hillman Imp versus Fiesta. You know, like, you can say, okay, if you crash at 60 miles an hour in a Hillman Imp, you've got a whatever percentage chance of dying, versus in a modern Ford Fiesta you've got X chance of dying. It doesn't work like that.
But I guess you could look at things like like quality of sustain and things like that, you know.
That's subjective. Like, some people don't want a guitar to sustain for ages.
Well, I don't want a car that's, you know, that's made in a wind tunnel, but, you know, I don't get the choice if I want to buy a new car.
Of course you can. You could buy an old one.
Well, yes,
Joe,
exactly.
You can't drive.
No, I know. But it doesn't change the fact that I love cars.
Why are you arguing about something that you can't drive? It doesn't matter.
No, sure.
And I'll have you know that my Ford Fiesta is absolutely wicked. So, you know.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I don't drive because cars these days look rubbish and it's too expensive to insure old ones. No, that's not true. I don't drive because I'm lazy.
I think you don't drive because you would need to not drink occasionally.
Yeah, that is why.
What are you saying, Matty?
I think for me, it's just down to that people keep using them. Technically, the Les Paul Standard was discontinued because no one bought it after 1960. But then loads of people started using them, and everyone is always chasing after, you know, that dream, their ideal image of their favourite player. And I'm sure if everyone could, they would all buy their classic. If you're into classic cars or you're into racing cars, you would all buy the racing cars that could, but it's not physically possible, you know. Whereas a guitar, you can be into Jimi Hendrix and still buy a Strat, you know. They're just, if they weren't, if people just went, oh, actually no, if no one played them anymore, then we probably would just move on to something else.
Well, maybe it, you know, we do need a modern guitar hero then. You know, if people are buying the guitars have played, you know, that's why Sunburst Les Pauls are popular, because, you know, think about the big names. You've got Slash, White Strats, people love Jimi Hendrix. You know, these guitars are popular because of the people that play them.
Yeah, but the problem is that modern guitar heroes still play those guitars.
Totally. And, you know, that's the thing is... Is there going to be someone who's going to break out from that? You know,
you've got examples like Steve Vai, you know, who play, you know, more modern guitars.
Maybe, but I mean, Steve Vai isn't Slash, you know.
But it just goes to show you though that, like, the technology argument is completely flawed. When people say, like, oh, you know, we're not driving old cars anymore, why are we playing these old guitars? It's like, well, you know, Steve Vai plays a lot of notes and he's got a guitar that at the time was very technologically advanced, or, you know, whoever you want to point to now, Tosin Abasi or whatever. But then you've still got people like Yngwie Malmsteen, who, one of the most technical players ever. What does he play? Plays a Strat. Yeah. So, like, the technological argument is basically pointless. It doesn't matter. It's just, like, those guitars are still popular because they're still cool and people still like them.
Fair enough. All right, moving on to the next question. Robin Smith asks very simply, what's the best all-in-one drive solution? Let's go around the room. Matt Knight.
All-in-one drive. I mean, all-in-one drive.
What do you think is the best drive that you can buy that will, that, you know, for you? We can only speak about this personally.
Are we saying...
to be versatility. It doesn't have to be a drive that... Well, I guess maybe... Do you think that's what all-in-one means?
Yeah, all-in-one drive, yeah.
A versatile drive. A drive that can do everything from transparent stuff to, sort of, you know, near fuzz. That's what I want.
Well, I mean, Chase Bliss Brothers, technically, I think if you went for spec on paper, technically you'd look at something like the Brothers because it is a transparent overdrive, a distortion and a fuzz. Obviously you could look at things like OD200, which is mainly, well, it's a hybrid digital analog, does a similar thing. You could go down the route of things like HX effects, you know, it really depends what you want. I mean, there's the reason
I want
that,
you to pick one drive pedal.
Well, the reason I'm saying all of that is, to be honest, I don't think there's anything out there that covers all of that very well. I think it's very difficult to build in a circuit that will cover that huge gain range. And then, do you want presets? Do you want, or do you just want a gain knob that goes from transparent to fuzz? Which isn't going to happen technically. So really, Chase Bliss Brothers, because it's the only one that sort of covers all three, because it's got like different circuits in it. So that's what I would say.
Mark Packham.
I don't know really. Again, all-in-one drive solution is so it's so difficult because like drive is such a wide-ranging thing. You know, is like a blues drive. Can you get a decent result for like a bluesy drive right through to like, you know, some like ridiculous like death metal sound?
Well, exactly. You can't. High gain drive exists on a totally different thing. I think realistically, you have to be choosing one or the other.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I kind of agree with that. In terms of the best solution, I mean, I guess some of the Origin Effects stuff has got a wide range of
The Revival drive is very good, yeah. I mean, it's certainly topical at the moment. Okay, so maybe rephrase it, because I do think an all-in-one, so something that's going to do high gain and transparent stuff, is pretty hard to come by. What would you have? If you had to have one drive pedal, what would you have?
Just one drive pedal and nothing else. I'd probably actually go for Redbeard Effects Red Mist, because I do think that is a kind of drive kind of platform almost.
It's fantastic. Won't do those low gainy things though.
No, I know. Well, that's what I'm saying, is I think there's a definite split here between kind of low gain subtle stuff, then you sort of, there needs to be a cutoff, and then it's like something that does the rest. And for me, like, if I'm going to use a drive pedal, then I would probably use something that does that, because like I kind of feel like a lot of the lower gain stuff, there are a lot of good solutions that you could get that from your amp. And then an all-in-one drive pedal to me suggests something that is like, okay, it needs to do something that's over and above most of the things that I can do with my amp already. So yeah, I'm gonna say the Red Mist. I'll tell you another good shout as well though, that actually does cover quite a range, is the MXR Dookie drive. With the reason being that obviously it's got the two amp sounds built in there, and it actually does handle fairly low gain quite well, and then obviously goes up to the kind of, you know, fully open cranked Marshall sounds. And surprisingly, for a signature product, well, I mean, I guess both of the things I've talked about are sort of signature products, but yeah, the Dookie drive in particular, for a signature product, actually does a very wide gamut of drives.
J-Cross.
Well, I mean, I'm going to struggle with this one, because the pedal that I think is my favourite drive on the market at the moment is the Pugilist, the Fender Pugilist. So I'm not going to talk about that, because people will get bored of me talking about it. So instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you a list of, on the Thomann website, the top five selling distortion pedals that they sell currently. So number five is, which, you know, maybe doesn't answer the question, but is quite funny and a nice little glimpse into the world of what people are buying. Number five is probably my second favourite drive pedal on the market at the moment, the TC Electronic Mojo Mojo. Take a drink.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Number four is the Electro Harmonix. Anyone care to take a guess?
Soul Food.
Nope. That's right, it's the Ram's Head Big Muff.
Right.
Number three is the Boss DS1. Number two, the second biggest selling distortion pedal on Thomann right now, the Behringer SF300 Super Fuzz, which of course, there's only one space left. What do you think is the top selling distortion pedal on Thomann at the moment?
I hate people.
Fender Pugilist.
Joe?
I don't know.
Matt, what are you saying? Biggest selling distortion.
It's going to be something stupid, isn't it? It's going to be something cheap.
It is not something. I mean, you know, cheap is relative. It's not a Behringer SF300 Super Fuzz, though.
I don't know.
The biggest selling distortion pedal on Thomann right now is that classic drive sound Proco Rat 2.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
Still 69 quid, which is exactly the same price it was 10 years ago, 11 years ago when I started working at GAC.
They've probably been £69 the entire time that I have been, I've been involved in any of this.
Yeah, it's
never
crazy.
Changed.
Absolutely
never changed.
Recession proof.
Yes. Now, for me, there are two drive pedals that I think do a really, really good job of, you know, pretty much everything. The Full Tone OCD, I think, is, you know, the best sounding drive pedal.
That's number seven on the list, just so you're
is
aware.
It? Is it? Well, it's a fan. It's a fantastic pedal that can do everything from sort of transparencies to, you know, to real sort of fuzzy fuzz stuff. And a very similar sounding pedal, in fact, is basically because I like the sound of the Full Tone OCD, the Walrus Audio 385 that Mark, you were a big fan of a few years ago when we included it in the Gear of the Year.
Great pedal, really good pedal.
Yeah, absolutely. Both fantastic. Right, next question, and I think this is going to be our last for this episode, boys. Andy McKenzie asks, well, he says, I am on the hunt for a Strat. What should I be trying? I can't do custom shop money, so £1,000 max. I tried a player series and it was just okay.
Wow, I'm surprised to hear that because, I mean, as you heard me say before, I absolutely love the player series.
Me too. I thought the player Strat, and bear in mind, I really went into that player series being like, Fender are rebadging an old unpopular series, you know, but it was absolutely fantastic, completely fantastic, the player Strat, which makes it slightly awkward to kind of recommend. But I guess if we can go up to £1,000, we've got a bit of a broader...
Yeah, I was just having a look and seeing how much the Performers are, which would be the... Or the Vinteras, I guess, if you're looking at Strats. I mean, the... Let's have a quick look here. This is a man looking on the internet. Okay, so $10.49, so a little over the budget, but I'm sure that your local guitar shop would do you a deal. The American Performers are very good guitars. They have got the new Yosemite pickups, which were designed like basically to take over from the Texas Specials, which were in the old American Specials, which were great guitars. I think they're great. They've got the big headstock, which is something that I always really like. But I personally shouldn't be saying this, but I just think the players are wicked. I really do, in terms of the amount of guitar that you get for the money. For 500 quid or something? I just think they're fantastic.
They are fantastic
and a great like platform as well, a great place to jump off. If you do want to do some mods afterwards, you can.
What are the Vintera options?
So Vintera, you've got 50s and 60s, and there is some 70s models as well. So just a quick refresh on the Vintera series. Basically, they took over from the Classic and the Classic Player series. They were all rolled into one. So the what was the Classic Player series became the Vintera mods. So there's the 50s mods and the 60s mods. And the Classic series became just the standalone Vinteras. So the differences there are you've got... so on the Strats... You have got an S1 switch, which brings in the neck pickup in any position. So that is on the 50s and the 60s. I am kind of racing back my memory, trying to think about what else is on there. The mods have got like a kind of a classic orange tint to the neck. The 70s are really cool. I mean, it's probably not going to be your first Strat, I would say, because they, you know, they come in three different shades of brown. They have got a three bolt neck joint, big headstock again, which I like, but not everybody does. Yeah, I mean, I don't know really. The Vintera stuff is really good. I think that the Tellies probably outshine the Strats from that series from my personal point of view. But that's because I still think that the Vintera 50s mod Telly is the best guitar you can buy for under a grand. But that's a discussion for you know, every other day.
I've got a lot of love for the 70s. What used to be the kind of Mexican classic 70s and now is the Vinteras. The guitar player from my band, that was his first like proper electric guitar. And there's just something about them that I still really like. Obviously, big headstock is the cooler option of the of the two. But also just the neck profile. Neck profile is really nice and they use a different kind of lacquer on there. It's like incredibly sort of high gloss from what I remember. And you know, for example, the maple necks are, it's not like a vintage tint or anything. They're like really bright sort of clean maple, and I always really like that. I thought that was cool. Can I give a shout out for a non Fender guitar?
Yeah, well, I was actually going to do that as well. So, yeah, go for it.
Well, I mean, you said he wanted a Strat. So, I assume we're going to talk about Squire.
No, I wasn't actually. For just to because, you know, we've talked about them a lot, and you know that I've got a particular they particularly appeal to me.
I know where you're going.
Just because of how well they play, I'm going to bring up the Reverend Six Gun TL, which is essentially Reverend's take on a kind of three single coil S-type guitar, although it's got their sort of signature offset body shape. I haven't actually played the Six Gun TL, but I mean, to be honest, their range is, the neck profile's the same on all of them, the body shape's the same, and you kind of just interchange the pickup configuration and whether or not it's got a trem. And the Six Gun TL looks amazing. It's three single coils, obviously, with a trem on there. That neck that is the same as all their guitars. The setup will be great. The fretwork will be great. And best of all, it comes in avocado green if you want it to.
avocado!
Great. With the roasted maple neck. And it's, you know, if you've been looking at things like the... it reminds me a little bit of the Yvette Young Ibanez guitars. It's got that sort of...
The Talmans.
The Talman guitars, yeah. But in particular, I think her guitar comes in a green colour, like a metallic green. This sort of looks like that, but obviously it's got, you know, just regular Strat pickups, and it's got that everything that we like about the Reverend feel. And they're not a lot of money. Cracking. The one that I'm looking at right now is £879.
Wow. Well, I can go a couple of hundred quid less than that and include a hard case because... friend of the podcast, Joe Doe Guitars, now through Vintage, of course, offer their Salty Dog, which is an S-style guitar, if you will, for £599 with a tweed hard case.
It's a little bit more esoteric, the going down the Joe Doe route.
Definitely a weird choice, but I think really cool. If you're looking for a Strat, maybe sort of, if it's not as your main guitar, or if you just want something that's a bit interesting and a bit different, a bit unique, I think the Joe Doe Vintage stuff is really cool. And, you know, we know that Vintage make great guitars anyway. Having sort of Joe Doe involved with that company, I think is fantastic. And being able to produce things at that price point is amazing. So I think, yeah, the Salty Dog is definitely worth a look. But yes, as Mark said, yeah, a little bit weirder. And then, you know, as we can go up to the £1,000 price point, like, you know, why not look at some of those modern Strat alternatives that are, you know, oh so popular at the moment. Things like the Ibanez AZ, because they do an Ibanez AZ 224F, which is their AZ, which comes with a plate, so it makes it look even more stratty. And comes in at just under £1,000, and you can get that in, like, they do lovely, that you get the lovely sort of roasted maple neck, and they do topaz burst, which is...
Do you mean topaz?
That's what I said.
Yeah,
I
was, you just said topaz.
Inflecting.
Yeah. Quite a weird way to say it.
Yeah, fair enough. But it's just a lovely flame maple top on there. So if you want something that's going to... That's going to have all those wonderful modern features that we know the Ibanez AZ series comes with, that's still stratty enough, then I think that is a very cool option. It is HSS, but it does, you know, have a coil split, so you could make it sound plenty stratty. Matt Knight, do you want to throw anything to the ring?
I was just scouring around the internet for secondhand stuff. I know maybe not necessarily the best option, because
not at all. You know, I know a little guitar shop in Angmering that has a fantastic old 70s Greco, early 60s. No, carry on.
Only because it got me down the sort of nostalgia trip to my first Strat, which was a 2001 Fender American Lone Star Strat in Shoreline Gold.
Such a great guitar.
Which had the Seymour Duncan pearly gates in the bridge and then the Texas Specials in the neck and the middle. Fantastic guitar. And now I want one. So I'm currently on the hunt as of right now for a 2001 American Fat Strat. But they were great guitars. I think we said it before. Highway 1. You know, that I think there's some great guitars that came out from Fender sort of 10, 15 years ago. I mean, there's great stuff from Fender now, so it depends whether you want to go new or secondhand, but there's definitely some secondhand bargains out there to be had.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and get something with lace sensors in, you know. Like this Fender American 89 standard Strat in graffiti yellow with three lace sensor golds in it.
I bet that sounds... Rubbish.
Absolutely brilliant.
Anemic.
I did notice actually that on a guitar shop website at the moment, there is an FSR player. Is it a player? That's got basically, it hasn't got lace sensors in, but it's got lace looking pickups, yeah. Just like solid white colours. I'm like, yep.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Very perfect. Nice. Very nice. Now that actually does bring us to the end of this week's free episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can, of course, listen to an entire extra episode of Guitar Nerds every week over on our Patreon site, patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can also find it in the description of this podcast episode. Now, this week on the Patreon, we're continuing our Gear of the Decade series, where we're totting up the best bits from 2010 through to 2019. Then, of course, at the end of this series, we're going to have to decide what is the best bit of gear of the entire decade. Now, to become a Patreon supporter, it costs you only $1 a month, and you can enjoy the podcast ad-free and early every week. But to get access to things like Gear of the Decade, well, that's $5, and you can enjoy the entire extra episode every week. Plus, you get access to our entire back catalogue, which has got loads of lovely things on it. And you also have the $10 tier, where you get all of that stuff, plus you become an executive producer, which means that I shall sing your song in the Guitar Nerd song that I'll sing shortly.
Yeah, that was clear.
Good.
Yes, absolutely. Clear.
So you can't believe it. We've pre-recorded, so like I can hang up on you lot now.
Yeah. Actually,
it's quality.
I was thinking, because we're actually listener. We normally record the Patreon episode after we've done the main one, but in order to get sort of the full argumentativeness out of Gear of the Decade, we did them all in kind of one or two-ish sessions.
I think it was four sessions.
Yeah, four sessions. But it means that we're not doing them at the moment. I've realised that I have no idea when the last one airs. So I need to check before an episode up. Otherwise, I'm going to be like, listen to Gear of the Decade, and actually, it will have finished weeks ago.
Yeah, we should probably plan that out.
Yeah,
Joe, it's 2032. Like, Gear of the Decade finished.
Yeah, exactly. But you can follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds and join the Facebook community at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Cheers, gang. Skip it up, Schultzy, Michael Howe, Brian Hansen, Jeffrey Wax, Eric Hammer, Mario Turan, Brian Einsler, Gavin van der Linden, and Jacob McGee. Pi, Mark Hizao, Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Newton, Rob Bosto, Christian Lomanson, Keith Adams, Eric Fallon, Andrew Good, Naren Peters, Richard Sedwell, Jake Cutmore, and Jamie Kemp. And Guitar Nerds. The 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 Guitar Nerds. Jamie Kemp and Matthew King. Zayn Day and Shoshonabu, John Anglin, Robert Gould, Tucker Ramadan, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagle, Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman and Rob Grant, Dave Lee and Emery, James Baker, Martin Griffin, Annabe, Jake Gray and Blake Wyland, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Hans Ams, Derek Rich, Rob Nordwick, Steve Merkel, J.D. Short, Robin Seth, Carlos Mantra, Brad Page, Andy McKenzie, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, and don't you forget it.